You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
This week on The Dan Nichols Show, the delights of spring in London, where yesterday three hailstorms, a lightning strike, two earth tremors, and a mild tornado gave me a real taste of the joys of England at this time of year. But it was all comfortably offset by what has fast become one of my favourite events on the calendar, the Alfred Dunhill Paddle Classic, which is awash with paddle enthusiasts, some a little more talented than others, and some great celebrities who come down to enjoy the game, to support the event, and to support the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation, the official charity partner of the tournament. And there are celebrities out on court at the moment. Michael McIntyre has just arrived. He's limbering up to play with Sir Andrew Strauss. Big Joe Marler's on the court at the moment. And then alongside me, by some distance, the biggest name we've got at the event this year, someone very familiar to rugby fans in particular, sport fans in general, and someone who's terrorised the occasional South African backline over his years as a rugby player. Now retired happily for opposition defences, not so for fans, but very much a joy to have him on the show this week. Anthony Watson, welcome.
Thank you very much. That might have been the best intro I've ever had. Slightly exaggerated, but thank you.
Well, look, when you WhatsApped it to me last night, I thought this is a bit much, but I'll do my best to get it word for word.
That's bad from you.
You said to me yesterday when we caught up in the morning that you were purely here, a bit of fun, amateur, don't really know what you're doing. I then saw you out on court and it looks like you've been playing paddle all your life and clearly the sport, but having a lot of fun, really good cause, but also a great couple of days here at Hurlingham.
Oh, it's my first time and it's been unreal. I mean, everything, you know, paddle is obviously a brilliant sport. The event itself is special, you know. I think, you know, from everything, from the clothes people are wearing, having everyone in white, to the setup, the food, the personalities that they've got here, this is a special, special event. It's almost like a mini Wimbledon, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. The paddle has been questionable at times. That's why your introduction, I said slightly exaggerated, because not sure I'm there where I need to be. But much like my golf game, I'm trying to improve.
It is, of course, something that you're able to do because the rugby career has now come to the end. And genuinely, as much as it wasn't always much fun watching you taking on my South African team and giving them a hard time, I think all of us as rugby fans are very sad when we see any player call time on a career a little earlier than perhaps they might have. But there was a lot of injury, there were a lot of challenges. How difficult a decision was it to say goodbye to the game?
Well, do you know what? It seems a bit rash for me to say it wasn't a difficult decision, but it wasn't, because it wasn't mine. And I think when it's taken out of your hands and it's very much, you know, matter of fact, it makes it easier to deal with. You know, I didn't want to, you know, continue on with the extreme pain I was in. You know, it was affecting my ability to just live a normal life, if I'm honest. And, you know, there are two injuries that I had said from the outset that you can't really mess around with. One being your brain and the other being your back. And, you know, it was to the point where, you know, I was sketchy going to take my son to the park and stuff, because I was on feet for too long and I'd have to constantly bend over and stuff like that. And at that point, I was like, look, this is questionable. And yes, I love rugby and it gave me everything. But, you know, my family is more important, and living a normal life and hopefully being able to live out the next 40, 50 years with as minimal issues as a result of playing is my focus. But I've got so many good memories from rugby. I loved it. And like I said, I think the fact that I had a brilliant surgeon who I trusted implicitly, and when he told me time's up, it's pretty straightforward. It's not like I can mess around with this or I can try and do this or that. When it's matter of fact like that, I think it's easier to deal with.
You also, although you retired at 30, you had a fairly long career, because you were about 7 when you first started playing professional rugby. I think it was actually, was it 17? You were then, I'm not sure if it still is, but then the youngest player ever to start in the Premiership.
Yeah, I don't think I'm the youngest player ever. I think George Ford was younger than me.
At 17, I mean, at that stage, I don't think I'd spoken to a girl at that stage, certainly couldn't drive a car, was trying to get through high school, and you were playing professional rugby. This is not what most 17-year-old boys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, it was surreal, because I'll never forget when I was selected in that game. The team obviously gets announced on a Tuesday, and I was very lucky that my school and the club, London Irish, had organised for me to have Tuesdays off school to go and train with the first team. But this particular Tuesday I wasn't in, so the team was announced, but I was sat in chemistry class, and someone texted me saying, mate, you know you're playing in the Premiership this weekend, and I was like, well, how the hell am I supposed to concentrate for the rest of this week in school? So I'm not sure my grades were appropriate, but it was, do you know what, it was a brilliant experience to do it young, because I found it, not easy is the wrong word, but it's easy to get comfortable, and I was probably at the stage where I was getting a bit big for my boots, and getting thrown into the deep end in men's rugby, you quickly realise that the same stuff that worked at under 20s level or under 18s level doesn't fly here. So you have to constantly innovate your game and realise that there's a lot more to playing at the top level than just relying on one or two things that have got you this far. You've now got to be a well-rounded rugby player, and doing that at a young age kind of enlightened me to what's important to make it at this level.
I'm picturing you arriving in your school uniform, you're putting away your chemistry homework, there are a couple of prop forwards having a cigarette in the corner of the change room. This is a completely different world, massively surreal. Yeah. How was that first stretch? You're just trying to take it all in and make sense of it.
It was very strange. You know, I was playing with guys that had been my idols, really. You know, like Dellon Armitage was always someone that I looked up to, and I was, you know, I wanted to be like him. And then next thing you know, I'm sat next to him in the changing room and, you know, lifting weights with him and stuff. It was surreal. I was quite fortunate again, though, that my older brother was in the academy at the same time. So he's 3 years older than me. So he kind of had shown me the ropes a little bit and told me what to expect, do's and don'ts. And to be honest with you, he probably saved me a lot of, he probably made a lot of mistakes that I would have made. So without him, it would have been a different experience. I was able to understand, you know, what things you should and shouldn't do as an academy kid, which is, you know, quite important in a professional rugby setup. You know, you don't want to be going in there thinking that you're the man, because you quickly realise you're not.
You do need a certain amount of self-confidence, because you're 17, you've got some giants on the rugby field, and they all know full well that you're making your debut and that your voice is just broken and you've just, just come out of school for the afternoon to come and play.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any sentiment from the opposition to, let's let little Anthony have a nice gentle introduction to
No,
the game.
It definitely wasn't gentle. You know, I played against David Lemmy pretty early on in that my first year playing professional rugby whilst I was still at school, and he absolutely schooled me up. He definitely wasn't going easy on me. But yeah, you do have to have a bit of self-confidence, but I think I took confidence from the amount of effort that I put into getting to that place that I was in. You know, whether it's extras on the training pitch or running in the off-season to stay fit, all those type of bits is where I took most of my confidence from, that I had done the work and the people that I trusted, i.e. the coaches and my teammates, you know, believed in me to do a job. And for me, that was just as much as the internal confidence that I had, was having those guys back me.
Last one on this space, you must have been by some distance the coolest kid at school when you got back from that first game.
I mean, mate, I think that having Tuesdays off school was pretty cool anyway, to go to game with the first team. So that didn't float too well with my mates, who were all stuck in class and I was swanning off to go train with the lads. But it was cool. It was cool. I can't lie. Yeah, there were some days where it was like pinch me moment. One of the best things, and this sounds a bit materialistic, but one of the best days was when I signed my first deal with Adidas, because that was like dream come true. I wore Adidas boots my whole life, and then now they're sending me stuff and expecting me to wear stuff, and that was like, all my mates were like, yeah, you're really taking the mick now. But it was, I loved it. Look, I really did love it. But you but also, you know, like I said, you can't get above your station. So you might be the man at school, but you go into the first team and you're just a team member. If anything, like you said, they want to show the other teammates want to show the young kid that this is how things are done, and you're not the man here.
It's unusual to have somebody of your age play, especially rugby, so young. But across sport, we do see people who come in mid to late teens. But for every Anthony Watson for every Lamine Yamal. There is the 16, 17-year-old who looks like they're going to be the next superstar, and it fizzles out for all manner of reasons. What was it that allowed you to get through that first stage, to set aside some of those distractions and the, wow, I've now made it, and realise that actually there's still quite a long journey to be had?
I think that comes... A fair bit of that, I think, comes with upbringing and who you surround yourself with. I think, you know, having a good support network that can keep you grounded is, in my opinion, for people going through that phase of their career, is the most important thing, because, you know, without people to tell you, you know, what are you doing, or people who are going to tell you straight, it's easy to believe your own hype and think you've made it and I can just coast now. You need people who are going to tell you honestly what... you know, where you're at and what you need to do. And like I said, I was lucky that my brother went through the experience before me, because that gave me, you know, I guess the ability to rely on someone with lived experience. But then my mum and dad were very, very rounded in their approach. You know, it wasn't just rugby is everything, which is important, but my mum, being of Nigerian descent, well, she is fully Nigerian, meant that education was still a massive part. And I think that gave me a pretty rounded picture into understanding that, one, this is going to come to an end, and two, you know, you might not make it still. Do you know what I mean?
I suspect you're being a little gentle there, because I know what African mothers are like. And African mothers do not care if you are a 17-year-old star of your rugby team. They will bend you over their knee if they need to.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I went to uni when I left school for 2 weeks, and I dropped out, and my mum has never been more upset in my whole life. So then when I tore my Achilles at 24, my mum said, right, I'm going to do all of the paperwork essentially, and you're going to university now. So then I had to go to university, and then I finished that, and she said, okay, well, now you need to do a master's. So my mum pretty much single-handedly forced me to get an education alongside rugby.
Good for her.
But that, I think it's important. It's important to have different hobbies things to distract you a little bit away from rugby, things that are going to progress you as an individual, because whilst you have to be all in on your sport, things like that just give you a better balance, and it gives you time to breathe and not think about your career all day, every day, because that can be a dangerous space to be in.
And extra important for people whose career doesn't take off. Thankfully, yours was not one of those examples. Burst onto the club scene, lots of excitement, already people talking, here is the next England star. Talk me through that step of the journey, starting to appear on the horizon of, could I get selected for my country? And then finding out that actually you had been.
Yeah, look, the journey with England for me wasn't, it appears straightforward, but it wasn't as straightforward as it seems, because I was actually in a fair few squads before that, and you know, I remember being in an Autumn Nations squad and a Six Nations squad, and then a tour to New Zealand, all before having a cap. And I was very much of the opinion there. I was like, again, as a youngster, I'm like, why am I not playing? I should be playing. So I was getting frustrated, really frustrated with not being played. And Stuart Lancaster, who was the coach at the time, had a very he was a brilliant man, but he said to me, basically, I don't think you're ready yet. And that's hard to take, but he was absolutely bang on. And I think that just being exposed to that environment earlier, but not playing, gave me the appreciation for what it's going to be like when you do play it, and make you a bit hungrier. So I think that handling that whole scenario of being in the squad first, kind of getting a feel for it and then playing, put me in much better stead. I think if I'd been thrown in like I felt I should have been at the time to play for England when I first was in a squad, I would have been miles off it. So again, I was very grateful, looking back on it now, for the kind of holistic care that I had as a youngster, being exposed to that environment. But then when you get your first cap, it was like everything I'd ever dreamed of, if I'm honest. You know, it was an unbelievable day. You know, you have your whole family in the stadium doing something that you dreamt of doing since you were 5 years old. It was literally like the best feeling in the world. But again, as any sportsman, as you've probably heard a million times, once you get one cap, it's very quickly, you know, the goalposts move, and then you want 10. And when you're at 10, you want 20. Then you want 30, 40, 50, and it just goes on like that. But you do have to appreciate and enjoy those moments whilst they're there. And I'll never, ever forget you know, my first cap and being able to represent my family name on the international stage, you know, because it represents not just me, it represents all the hard work that they've done. And for me, that was just as important as just being able to play the game, was to be able to represent my family and reward them for all the sacrifices that they'd made.
Talking on the show last year to Brian Abana, who was dropped from this year's paddle event because you were available.
He's going to punch me next time he sees me.
It's all right, he's let himself go, he'll be fine. Brian is someone who has won a World Cup, he's won tournaments around the world, won trophies at clubs in South Africa, in Europe. He has a remarkable career and over 100 test matches for the Springboks, and yet he also says that the game he picks above all others is that very first match. Mm. And the endorsement that comes with it, the sense that, yeah, this dream has come true.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's funny because my debut was off the bench against New Zealand. And it was, you know, talk about getting thrown in the deep end. I know I was coming off the bench, but I looked at the opposition and there was Dan Carter, Sonny Bill, Richie McCaw. And I was looking at 23 on the England team and I was thinking, who the heck is that guy and what is he doing there? And then the following week, I was selected to start. And guess who I was against? Brian Habana. So I got exposed very, very early, but he's a brilliant man. You know, he, at that time, obviously with one cap to my name, people don't know anything about you, but Brian was amazing with, you know, after the game, he spoke to me, you know, he basically said, look, if I can help you in any way, I'm more than happy to help you, and said, you know, I look forward to watching you in the rest of your career. And I think as a youngster, and you've got a legend of the game, one of the best wingers to ever play, offering their help and also, you know, saying stuff like that to you after a game, it gives you even more confidence. So, yeah, he's a brilliant man and an unbelievable rugby player, better person, which I think says a lot about him.
I think he was just trying to get you on his side so he goes hard as ever for future games. He spotted a rival when he saw it. And that's Brian to a T. He's an extraordinary person. I know you have a paddle match to win shortly, but I do want to ask you quickly about the other team that you played with for some consequence. Far fewer games, of course, because of the nature of that team and how infrequently it plays, but not one, but two British, Irish and Lions tours. I think when you first get that international cap, that's maybe something that you just start thinking about possibly one day. What was that like to gravitate onto that stage?
I mean, you talk about the biggest moments of your career. That would be, I mean, debut and that one are probably the biggest ones. And you know, I think that you grow up obviously wanting to play for England. Like, that's the number one focus, that's the dream. And the Lions, you know, ultimately it does rely on a little bit of luck. You need selectors who like you. You need a style of play that suits you, but also you need timing. It's every 4 years. You could pick up an injury and not be in form at the right time. So it's, yeah, there's a lot of things that have to go your way in essence. So you don't think too much about it, but when you get called up, you know, you find out on TV with everyone else. So it's a nerve-wracking experience. But for me, as rugby experiences go, the Lions is one of the most special and iconic things that you can do. So to have been part of a select group that have done that was amazing. And particularly the 2017 tour, given it was to New Zealand, you know, they were, well, both times we were playing against the world champions. So that didn't make it any easier. But I didn't go into that tour as necessarily someone who was going to start, but I can remember 12 years previous to that, waking up at 7 a.m. to watch those games with my old man. So to then fast forward to then be playing for the Lions, starting in a test in Wellington, deciding test, and look up and have my old man, the same person I was watching it with 12 years ago, is a moment that will live with me for the rest of my life. That was special. And then it's, you know, obviously playing with the best players in Britain and Ireland, and the bond that's formed across that is unlike anything else. You know, everyone uniting to try and win a series against the world champions is special, and you make memories that are ridiculous. Some best left off camera, but majority just being surrounding yourself with brilliant people. Who are all on the same wavelength and just want to enjoy each other's company, time for that fractional period, and ultimately try and win games.
the rugby career is now done, sadly. I know there's a lot of excitement. You're doing a lot of work with the rugby union at the moment, a couple of cloak and dagger projects that you've mentioned. But you've also got some time in South Africa, I think. So looking forward to having you out there, maybe some time on the golf course in South Africa.
Sounds perfect.
And the chance from opposing sides to watch England and the Springboks clash and renew one of rugby's great rivalries.
100%. That's the one.
Well, lovely having you on. He is a two-time Lions tourist, over 50 caps for England, and played for his club professional rugby at a stage when most people are still dealing with acne and awkward conversations with girls. Become one of the great rugby stars of England and one of the stars this week at the Alfred Dunhill Paddle Classic. Anthony Watson, our guest this week on The Dan Nicholls Show.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.